Welcome to Translate This, a podcast about language, culture, life, and the hilarity of it all. Well, welcome back, season two fans. Lauren and Melissa are here to bring you another exciting episode of Translate This. And we have a special guest today that we have been waiting to record with for a long time. We are very, very excited to introduce this person. And I'm going to go ahead and read you a little bit of information about our special guest, aka Superfan. So, Kelly Mills has been working in the fields of language access, project management, and cross-cultural advising for over 30 years. She joined the Elections Division of the Oregon Secretary of State's office 2 years ago to implement a new law requiring voter pamphlets to be translated into the most spoken languages in Oregon, and to convene a Translation Advisory Council, otherwise known as a TAC Council, or a TAC. Prior to a new career in elections, she worked at the National Center for the State Courts, consulting with state court administrators for compliance of the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. In this role, she applied her 16 years experience as a statewide director of court language access services at the Oregon Judicial Department. And if that's not enough, with her team of schedulers, analysts, and linguists, she ensured the provision of statewide court interpreter and translation services and oversaw the certification of Oregon court interpreters. Her career in public service was sparked while, with international students and faculty at two universities as a senior trainer for the Peace Corps in Central America and an English teacher in Latin America and Japan. Kelly holds a master's degree in international management and speaks Spanish. She usually is planning her next international trip with her husband of 30 years, volunteering for the Girl Scouts and spending time with her three adult children. You know,
wow,
that's amazing.
Wow, I'm going to have to do one of these.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm can't believe, you know, when you count the years. I've been doing this a while.
Just a little bit, but what you've done, Lauren, wow. Go ahead and I know that you, she's,
I know,
we're
I
playing wanna, around we're... with our new language, fun noise background. We might be editing this part. Sometimes we'll ramble off and we'll say, this is probably just going to get edited out right here, but can we get it?
Yeah. How to do one of those.
We have to do one of those.
I felt like we needed that after that.
Oh my
intro.
Gosh.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's very, very impressive. Very impressive, Kelly. So,
Thank you.
The first thing, and maybe not what the first thing people think of when they read your bio, but the first thing I read was, I want to know, are you really a Girl Scout?
I am. I'm like a lifetime member.
Oh
and
my
thank
gosh.
You for asking. I actually volunteer in a really special program. It's called Girl Scouts Beyond Bars, and it's for youth and their families who have incarcerated mothers or sisters. And so we have a special troop that goes up to have a Girl Scout meeting once a month with their mothers and inside the prison. And then we go outside and do regular Girl Scout things. So we're selling cookies, but I love those girls. My main role actually is driving. I drive, probably almost 200 miles on those days to pick up girls at rural stops, gas stations and things where people drop them so they can go up and see their moms.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that's just amazing. I don't think I've known anybody who is involved in government as you, but then has the time to do something so incredibly important for women.
Right.
Oh, I'm in awe. I'm the super fan now.
Yeah.
Well, I have to be honest though. I mean, I'm now an empty nester. My three adult children don't live with us, and it's my husband and a cat. So I was looking for ways to get back into something besides just working and, you know, running people to soccer practice and stuff like that.
Right, right. Well, so that's why I thought, well, if you were a Girl Scout, which you definitely are, I wondered that your service in the Peace Corps, like, that's another extension of scouting, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, sort of. And actually, I am and was way too wimpy to actually be in the Peace Corps. I had a lot of classmates in my graduate program who had just come back from the Peace Corps, and they're all wonderful people, but I'm too wimpy. And so, yeah, my role there was I was living in Costa Rica with my husband, who's Costa Rican, and just had a baby. And I was looking for some professional opportunities. And so I worked for the training center. And my area was cross-cultural training for volunteers when they were doing their 12 weeks of orientation. Okay. And they would live in a host family, and we'd go and visit their host families and talk a lot about the adjustment process and what to expect. And anyway, it was a great job. I loved my coworkers because most of them actually were Costa Ricans teaching Spanish to the to volunteers. So, yeah.
So, did you meet your husband in Costa Rica?
No, I met my husband working at Central Washington University as an international student advisor for Japanese students, a very special program for Japanese students, not Costa Ricans. but yeah, we saw each other often at potlucks and river rafting trips for students. And that's where I met him. He was in the U.S. studying on a USAID scholarship. And then we got married and moved to Costa Rica.
Wow. So how long did you live in Costa Rica?
2 years. Yeah.
Okay. 2 years. And So did you conceive any children there, or were they all over here?
Well, I'm actually not sure where it happened. There's borderline. But yes, I'm going to find, I've met women over the years who've given birth abroad, and we have a lot of really interesting stories. I did give birth in a public health hospital in Costa Rica.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And that was your first child?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Again, who is that woman? I don't recognize her.
Yeah. I mean, wow. I'm still just sitting there going, is there anything that you can't do?
Yeah. Oh, yes. There's plenty.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't think there's anything wimpy about you. You got married and had your baby in the public hospital in Costa Rica. And for our listeners, Costa Rica is a beautiful, beautiful country, and it's had major advances in the last decade. But I also, as a child, spent time in Costa Rica, and it wasn't always that way. And depending on where you were at, and depending on the class you came from, services were either incredibly limited, didn't exist, or you were very lucky and you were amongst the elite that had something that you could, or be air, you know, lifted out of the country.
That's a really good point. And hopefully we'll live there again when we retire, at least part of the year. But I was there again 30 years ago. There were a lot less cars, and my husband was from the country, from a little tiny coffee farm. And, you know, he remembers his first, when they got electricity and when they got a toilet with running water. And then over the years, we've been involved with an exchange program, Oregon and Costa Rica. Yeah, these kids are coming and they're like, yes, we have a summer house at the beach and a pool and a maid. And I'm like, that's not the Costa Rica I know.
Much more
humble. But yeah, lovely people. And another thing was their great health system, which still continues.
Yeah. Now that's absolutely true. And one of the fun facts about Costa Rica that a lot of people don't know, they don't have a military. And and it's one of the countries that remains very safe to live in as a national Costa Rican or a foreigner coming in and becoming nationalized. So I know a lot of people that are retiring there, a lot of people who have moved there, not even retired, just to live there. And now with our global economy and our nomadic culture, people are really looking at places like Costa Rica to reinvent themselves and to have a different quality of life and to benefit. So I think we'll see the country continue to evolve, and it'll be interesting to know you after you've been there a while again as a different part of your life, not as a younger woman, but as an established woman, and to see what you think of the differences of the country and if you prefer it or if you miss the days of no cars and less people.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be really interesting because the other side is my husband's been living here for a very long time and he's changed, obviously.
Yeah.
And so, inching toward this going back, he's been going for a month every year since his dad passed and he's been hanging out with his mom. And but yeah, he comes back with stories where, oh, yeah, you've changed a lot and the country's changed a lot. And it's not always as nostalgic or as you remember it.
Right. Right.
Does he want to move back more than you want to move back? Because with me dating someone that's from Guatemala, I want to move back more than he wants to move back. So I'm curious what that's like for you.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we're talking about kind of six months, but mm-hmm. he probably would like it more and we'll see what happens. But yeah, there was a time when I called it the amnesia years when I had three kids and I was working full time and you just do everything as fast as you can. And I was like, there's no way I can go back. But, you know, I'm in a different time in my life and it does look relaxing and the sense of family and connection is different. It's different there.
So did you grow up in Oregon or did you? Yes. Okay.
Yes. I did. But I was trying to get out of Oregon. Weird story. When I was in high school in a rural small high school in Oregon, in the 80s, mm-hmm. there was still home economics class.
Yep.
And we made cream puffs and tried to sew an apron. But even worse was there was a club called Future Homemakers of America. The great thing about FHA was I was in home ec and my teacher said, hey, there's this scholarship by Kikkoman and soy sauce company to send students to Japan for summer. So and you should apply. And so I did. I mean, and I was totally naive. I had no real understanding of the world. My summer jobs were like hoeing mint fields and picking strawberries and
typical and, Oregonian.
Yeah. So I spent a really amazing summer with a host family and between my junior and senior year of high school. And I mean, it changed my life. So thank you, Future Homemakers of America. And I have made a home, by the way.
There you go.
Success.
It's actually probably one of the most practical classes that anyone could take because, you know, you learn how to measure. You have to use math, right? You have to learn what you have to put in a recipe or what you have to measure to create drapes or whatever it is you're sewing. I mean, there's some very practical lessons in home ec. Skipped it. Yeah, I wish I would have taken the class. I ended up taking something else. I was like, I'm not taking it. I was protesting because I thought, oh my gosh, it's the 80s and I'm still in a home ec class. So, but then we did have some boys. Yeah, it was very embarrassing. Yeah, I'm glad you feel my pain. I'll share that with you. And I do regret, though, that I didn't take it. I had friends that were guys that took it and they loved it, but I think they did it because they wanted to meet girls. So that was, you know, that was part of their motivation of taking
that
class.
That's the old way.
And
then, you know, later I taught, after college, I taught English in Japan on a...
Yeah. So I want to hear about that because so you had this summer and then you went to school and then you're like, okay, I'm headed back. Was it like, I've got to get back to Japan now that I've been there? Were you planning on just being there the rest of your life?
No, I was so enthralled. I was like, I've got to get back to Japan. I've got to find a way. So, I mean, I only looked at colleges that had Japanese programs and went to the University of Oregon. And then when I was in college, I couldn't really afford to study abroad to Japan, which was my dream. So I was trying to figure out how can I get back. So I ended up doing one summer I did an internship. I can't remember how it happened, but again, a weird story. it was an internship with Seibu, which is a giant conglomerate department store trains. They had you could go to Japan and work in their restaurants.
So
I worked in a cookie factory and I worked at a cookie stand in the department store. And then I worked at a like a lunch place. Mm-hmm. You know, they call it salarymen. They come in and have these set lunches. And
yeah.
So I practiced my Japanese, and then I was still, you know, looking for ways. So the Japan exchange program or Japan exchange teacher program for the mm-hmm. Japanese embassy was just starting, and it's a year for college graduates to teach English, be a human tape recorder in middle schools. I was in five middle schools. I co-taught English. I was the native speaker in public schools for 2 years.
Wow. And now, what city were you in?
I was in Iruma-shi, which is northwest of Tokyo. A lot of people rode the train in, maybe 45 minutes to, mm-hmm. to I think, western Tokyo. Yeah. Yeah.
Must have been really exciting. I mean, because Oregon, we have TriMet, which is great, and if you're in Portland, but outside when you've got the Amtrak that goes up and down the state, yeah, not too much, maybe a little time. Across,
or they put you on a bus instead,
and they stick you on a bus most of the time.
It was just mind-boggling. The trains, the kids cleaning their own school and serving lunches.
Wow.
That turn on the music, everyone, including the teachers, all start scrubbing the floors and the bathrooms.
Wow.
They had home ec where the kids made their home ec was fancier, like an apple that's carved like a swan and, you know, beautiful. You've seen Japanese food. The presentation is everything. So like they were doing those classes. And I kind of learned about Japanese and their relationship with English, love hate relationship, and it was really fun.
We have those similar relationships. I think most Americans have that love hate relationship with the French. I think that's very shared in our culture, where we are envious because we think it sounds beautiful, but then we are like, oh, the French. Oh, yeah. You know, it's just cultural differences. But I do know the Japanese, you know, they very much want to learn English, and it is difficult. I mean, because you're talking about also, just for those of you learning languages, we're talking about the palate of your mouth, learning to pronounce things a certain way, and then all of a sudden you have to make some accommodations that your mouth doesn't want to make, and it makes it very difficult. The one good thing, though, that you did was that you married a Costa Rican later, so you could transfer those sounds that you learned in Japanese to your Spanish.
Yes, I've heard that. Like your second and third languages, you've learned a lot of strategic skills in your brain to pick up languages.
But Japanese and Spanish phonetically have very similar sounds. So so it's very easy. It's actually easier for the Japanese businessmen that we used to teach, for them to learn Spanish than to learn English.
Yeah, definitely.
I
found that's amazing. True.
Yeah.
And at that time, my dream had been to speak Japanese and read and write Japanese, and I had formally studied and. But after 2 years, I was like, oh my gosh, I am never going to be as fluent as I want to be here. I tried, but it's just it's a very difficult language, right?
Yeah.
The syntax is different. Mm-hmm. The writing is different, even the direction of the writing and the phonetic kanji, right? So you have to memorize basically pictographs. Like 10,000 to read a newspaper. So I wimped out. I met an Ecuadorian couple who were teaching Spanish in Japan and English, and started hanging out at Mr. Donut to learn Spanish. And then he hooked me up with a nonprofit organization in Ecuador that helps children learn English and, you know, allows them to go to like higher level high schools and so on. And so, I was trying to get out of Japan. And then I fell in love with Spanish.
Okay. That's an easy thing to do.
I have an interesting fact that I will fact check later, but from what I've heard, it takes on average probably somewhere around 400 hours to really get a hold of the language of Spanish. But I hear with Japanese, it's upwards of 2,000 hours. So, really? I mean, yeah. There's a huge jump from both of those languages. But right. the one thing is, since I've learned my broken Spanish that I have now, I can understand Japanese a little bit better because mm-hmm. of the way that it sounds. And so it's a very, I think it's very helpful if you learn Spanish to then try to learn Japanese, but you're going to have to study six times more.
Well, yeah. I think it's interesting to note this too, because Lauren's boyfriend learned Japanese because he's a huge fan of anime. And this whole new generation of anime lovers, he's also a graphic designer. So, you know, there's
he just loves the culture and everything about
it. He can't wait to go. So he's learned so much Japanese just by watching films and, you know, playing video games and listening to it in Japanese. And that's actually how he learned his English, was just playing video games. And we've been hearing that story. Yeah, we've been hearing that story a lot, actually.
Really?
It's the new way. It's quite interesting that things are happening. And then it's not even just Spanish. We were meeting with a woman who's Quebecois last week. We had a business meeting with her, and she was talking about how the kids in Quebec are losing their native language because they're playing video games in English. They're uh-huh. watching serials Netflix. And Netflix, yeah. everything in English. And so they're not really, they're losing so much. And she says it's quite tragic because if those listeners out there know anything about the Quebecois, they're purists. Their French is like from the 1500s. So it's they don't allow any words to come in that uh-huh. are not
protect their language,
the technical word, or they make one if they will not anglicize anything. Whereas Japanese and Spanish, we're anglicizing everything.
They embrace it all. Definitely.
Oh yeah. Yeah, completely.
You know, and then I was doing some research recently, for our Translation Advisory Council, we were going to do some training. And so I started, lurking in LinkedIn and online translator communications. You know, I was Googling, what do you think of reviewers? And but anyway, so I stumbled across, I'm still learning about localization, like solidifying it. But there's a lot of talk on these groups, or maybe I just found someone, but localizing the Japanese video games is huge. And a lot of conversation about how to do that. It put practice, you know, it gave me a solid thing to kind of latch onto, like, what does that really mean? But it also makes me remember how popular video games are and the Japanese culture. And my friend, her college student and another friend, like, again, you wouldn't imagine these two boys, but they mm-hmm. were on a mission to go to Japan over the break, and they had this fabulous itinerary, but it was sparked by this interest in the Japanese culture from manga and anime and maybe video games, probably.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get right into what we're doing with the TAC Council and how we actually met before I get there, I do want to touch one more thing. You mentioned about home ec and how everybody, when the music started and people had to clean the schools and clean the bathrooms. I just recently watched, because, you know, sometimes I get insomnia, people, and I'm just like scrolling through Instagram reels. It happens.
I'm scrolling.
Yeah. So there was a Japanese gentleman. He was an English teacher. He was not a native English teacher, but he was a Japanese native speaker, but teaching English in Japan, like, you know, all countries have. And he was talking about how we need to make ourselves happier and how the people who are in some of the biggest corporations of Japan, those CEOs still clean their own toilet every day, because cleaning your toilet is one of the keys in Japan that is believed to have a happy life, have a clean toilet every day. I have never heard that ever. I'm like, what is that about?
I mean, they have the best toilets in the world, though.
They do.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
They do.
I'd probably clean it, too, if it was that nice toilet, you know?
They practically clean themselves, those toilets. Yeah.
That's funny. But I'd add to that, too, again, like at the U of O, I met Japanese exchange students, and one, what was her degree? Art history. Well, she ended up working for a Japanese cosmetic brand.
Nice.
But she's still, this, maybe it's changed now. I kind of think it hasn't, but she's, part of her job was emptying ashtrays.
Okay.
In the morning and making tea, even though.
So, yeah.
I think that still, it still lingers, but for sure, cleaning schools, everybody does it, boys and girls.
That's good. No, that is something, and there was something in the news yesterday that they're getting rid of the Naked Japanese Man annual run or whatever it is that they're doing. Oh. And they showed a little clip of them. But they weren't outside running naked. I mean, when I think of that, I always think of the one in England. But
or the naked bike ride
or the naked bike ride in Portland.
I was going to say, naked bike ride in Portland. I just can't. I can't imagine that one. That
well, was, yeah. The naked bike ride in Portland, I have not participated, but Lauren's brother did it annually,
which
with
also
his
is Melissa's son.
Yeah. That's Lauren's brother when he does that.
Oh, I'm, awesome. I'm going to use that one too.
Yeah.
His
brother. Because, you know, it's her brother and I don't have to think about it that way. You know, I'm just not, I don't want to.
He was a pretty proud attendee for a pretty. How many years? 4 or 5 years?
Wow. Very much. Yeah, yeah, very dedicated. When he goes out and does social justice protests, then he's my son. But when he does the naked bike ride, he's Lauren's brother. So
awesome. I'm like,
not my child at that moment. So, but he has now continued his public display of his body, but in ways that will not get him arrested. He's recently become a hand model for his new company.
Yeah.
And that was exciting. So,
He's another one from listening to the podcast. I feel like I know him.
Yeah.
Richard.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. And that was the other thing. Richard is off getting married. So he apologizes that he cannot be on the podcast.
He's still getting married? Come on.
He's had some challenges getting married because, you know, he's getting married in this previous Soviet bloc country. And he spent some time in Portland having to get paperwork. And then he had to leave Spain and go there. And then now he's in that country, which, you know, for his own privacy, we're not saying where.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's going to be getting her. He's in love.
Oh,
he
yeah.
is head over heels in love. I've never seen that man more in love than ever.
Oh, wow.
In love.
Wow.
So it's a good thing. We're all happy for him. But I was really hoping that he was going to be on the podcast, particularly with you because of the Japanese connection. But to be honest with you, he'll even tell you he's not a real Japanese person.
But it's his heritage.
It's his heritage. He goes every so often. He's taken his fiance there.
Yeah, they went last year.
They had a very good time. Yeah, and so, you know, he doesn't speak the language, but, you know, whatever.
I'm hoping to get him on this season for an episode to talk about his experiences because... Yeah. He's had
coming
some
to Japan
stories and just in general living where he is now. So
hopefully
we'll get an update.
I've always enjoyed listening to the podcast and the way you guys play off each other and your different experiences. And he seems thought-provoking person.
He is. Oh, yeah. He really is. So, he's a thinker for sure. One of the things, though, that we all share in common, and I don't know how you feel about this, because I have to, before we go on to our next, I have to ask this question. Are you a ramen head?
No.
Oh, okay. See, we're all ramen heads. And wherever we go, we try to find ramen. Like, every place.
Ramen's good.
Yeah,
it's good. But I would say my husband's a ramen head. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's always let's go out for ramen. I love it, but
yeah.
I'm with you, Kelly. I'm more of, I'd rather get maybe sushi or something else.
Oh, I love the rice.
Yeah, exactly.
Japanese rice.
But I don't know. There's just something about ramen. It's just so satisfying. And how long was your husband in Japan?
Well, he was never in Japan, except when
in Japan. Okay. When you went to visit.
Yeah,
for some reason. Okay. Just you were there. Okay.
Yeah. Because that was before we were married. We did go to Japan. When I used to work for a university, I went to Japan once a year to recruit students. And
nice.
It was good.
Did he like it?
Oh, yeah. He liked it. Oh, that's good. Like one time we went with a baby in tow, and he was babysitting. And it wasn't because he's not a good babysitter, but it was, yeah, it's challenging to travel with a baby.
Yes, it is. Very much. Oh my goodness. I don't know how you did that one. We didn't start traveling till Lauren was 9. Mm-hmm. Actually we did one. Yeah. Internationally, look, domestically. Yeah. When she was younger, I think our first family vacation, you were 4 when we went to Disney World. So
yeah. Well, wow. Probably the first big one I remember.
That was the big one.
Times we traveled.
Yeah.
From Seattle.
Yeah.
We did the local Seattle
stuff, but yeah.
Yeah. I was a kid, we never went on vacation. It was pretty much just camping.
Oh, that's nice.
But in Oregon, it's beautiful.
I was going to say.
But my kids have traveled a lot their whole life.
Well, maybe they're inspired by you.
Yeah, my daughter taught English in Spain last year.
That's right. She wasn't too far from us. Yeah.
She was in Sevilla.
Yeah, do you think she's coming back? Is she going to come back again?
It was a year, 1 year program. Okay. And she came back last May, spring.
Do you think she's going to ever go back to Spain?
I don't think so. No.
No.
One and done.
In that area, too, it's totally different than a lot of other areas of Spain. So I can imagine if it wasn't her vibe, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not my vibe. That's why, I love to go for a weekend or something like that. But to live there, I couldn't do the heat.
Yeah,
it's so hot there.
In May, it was 100. I guess April, it was almost 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you came to visit her. And
yeah. My friend said it's the frying pan of Spain.
Exactly.
It is. Vanilla or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it had more to do with she had a new boyfriend. So they were met, and then she was apart, and now she's back. So,
that'll do it. That'll Lauren bring you back those relationships.
Yeah, I know.
Well, speaking of relationships, I'm going to segue over to that. Maybe people are wondering, how do we know this impressive person? Because, we're just who we are. But she's all of this. And we are very, very fortunate that the people that sponsor this podcast, our company, RBA International, is working with Kelly currently at the Secretary of State's office. And we are incredibly honored to be a part of the process of language access for Oregonians. And let me just touch on that just a little bit. Language access is a topic near and dear to our hearts at what we do professionally for Barbier, because when you have access to language as a citizen or a resident or a person living in a country, it means that you're able to engage more with government. It means that you're able to understand your rights and understand the customs and understand what it is that you should be doing for your new country of residence as a civilian. And it's incredibly important to have that expressed to you in a language that you can understand so that you can assimilate. So many people think language access means that you're going to continue to separate and not assimilate into a culture. But the more access there is to language, the more people assimilate. And that is something you can all fact check me on. But I know that that's a truth in our industry. It's proven time in and time out. So we've been lucky enough to work with Kelly and provide translation services for this particular new piece of legislation. We're so thrilled to be able to be a part of this, Kelly, and we're always so grateful that we were elected, so to speak, to be in this role. But you are also new to this role because you have been working with the certification of interpreters, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're over here doing translation, which is not interpreting, which a lot of people don't understand.
Right? Oh my gosh. Tell NPR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally not the same thing, and just for the audience out there, translation is written document translation. It has nothing to do with the spoken word. That's all interpreting. And anything spoken or signed is interpreting. You can do some sight translation, which is just reading a document out loud, but that's still the act of thinking about how to translate those words without it being something in a conversation. I'm really grateful that the state of Oregon is doing this. I know there are other states out there to dial this back just a little bit. I think it's best to start with a question that I think most people are going to ask, because I just know lately people are just not up to understanding government as maybe they had been a few generations back.
Oh, yes.
So what is a Secretary of State, and do you have a desk?
Did you say, do we have desks?
Yeah, secretary's desk. You know, it's a secretary. Oh, okay. Is it the state desk? What's a secretary of state?
Well, yeah, I think every state has one. I'm pretty sure it's called secretary because there's a National Association of Secretary of State. Yeah. The Secretary of State is the chief elections officer in every state. And so they oversee elections and federal laws and local laws about elections. They work very closely with, in Oregon, counties who have either elected or appointed clerks to run elections. And then all the staff and volunteers from, in Oregon, vote by mail. You know, they have volunteers that go to secure drop-off boxes, which we've been talking about with Russian translators recently. What's a drop box compared to a ballot box?
Yeah.
So, and then our Secretary of State also has archives or state archives, state auditing, state corporate business division, as well as public services. So I'm not sure about other states, but yeah, there is desks, and it's an elected position in Oregon, which is kind of interesting. And again, that's something we've been talking recently about with the translators is what does it mean for a partisan elected position, but then they serve all of their constituents and, you know, in a not neutral, but
in a role.
Just like they're not a Democrat only or a Republican only doing their thing. But yeah, so it's very interesting. And my colleagues in elections are just a dream to work with. They have so much information and knowledge. They work really well with the public. Right now, we have filings for the primary in Oregon for candidates, and it's very busy. And then ballot measures are very interesting. It's kind of like when I started working at the Judicial Department, I read the newspaper differently after that. Like,
yeah,
about I can imagine
justice and criminal justice and public policy. So same thing. It's like elections are, well, behind the scenes elections is really fascinating.
Yeah. You know what? It has been, I feel like I'm in the VIP club.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
It's just amazing to be able to know what's happening at the forefront of the state, you know, because, you know, elections are everything,
right? I feel
like
that too.
Yeah. And all the like thought, that too. The thought that goes behind every single piece of paperwork. I know that we can speak about Oregon in this situation, but wow, I mean, it's something that I think every Oregonian should know is how much effort, how much sweat, blood, and tears goes into this.
Yeah,
these are very, very dedicated public servants, and it's a shame. I mean, that some people don't understand that, or they think that they have so much staff and time that they could be doing nefarious things in the closet. You know, it's just like they are working their buns off.
They are
very dedicated people. And our work, working, translating voters' pamphlets, I mean, what could be more meaningful than providing access to democracy?
Exactly. It is exactly that. Providing access to democracy. I think you've just titled the podcast. That's it. Look at the wisdom there. That's amazing.
I'm loving this work. Thank you.
Well, and it shows. I mean, you write some of the best emails I've ever read. They are.
I like to be clear.
They are. They're extremely clear. So for our audience, her emails read like a set of instructions before you're going to start writing your dissertation. They are truly amazing. Wherever U of O, you did a great job with this one.
Interesting.
You know, shout out to U of O and to the program you went to.
Thank you.
Your writing is amazing. And, you know, and I fancy myself a pretty good writer. I am just in awe every time. I don't even have to necessarily work with your particular project all the time, but I just read your emails just for the fun of it because it's just great. It's fun.
Now I'm going to think about that. But you know where that comes from? I mean, I love writing too, but it's because we work remotely. Our relationship is remote. And
yeah.
Yeah.
We have to be extremely clear and clarify and make sure all the expectations are the same because it trips us up sometimes, and not just our group, but so yeah. And then, you know, different time zones,
right.
People's
right.
time is really valuable, but
right.
That's what I've loved about this program is, I mean, just given the reins to set it up, you know,
yeah.
envision it, think about it, how to fit it into, you know, statutory timelines for elections. Mm-hmm, they never, mm-hmm. never imagined adding one translations or two, a council to review the translations,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
And we've come up with a review form that we all work together on. And mm-hmm. Yeah, the council, we could talk a little bit about them. Like,
yeah.
again, when you were mentioning, you know, newcomers, mm-hmm. it was give and take. Like these we have 25 members who speak 13 different languages, and some of right. them, you know, dabble in translation or are translators, but most of them are not. They're cultural liaisons mm-hmm. to their communities, and they give so much of their time. They are reviewing the translations before they're finalized. They're looking for cultural appropriateness. They're looking for things that make sense in Oregon that might be different in California.
Right.
And then some of the languages, I mean, I'm sure this is true in many of your projects, but these terms do not exist at all. Like Marshallese, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ukrainian. Lacunas. We spend a mm-hmm. lot of time talking about how the language is evolving there and, mm-hmm. and the words matter.
Right.
So
right. Right.
I love these people.
No. And we actually, for everyone listening, again, the thing that's wonderful is that the TAC, the Translation Advisory Council, we're able to work with them and ensure that we are creating a message that is conveyed in the way Oregonians need to read it. And we need to always be cognizant of that, obviously, in our industry. But this particular opportunity, I'm going to call it an opportunity that we don't always get,
yeah.
is that we get direct feedback, but we also get to learn what is and what isn't working in terms of stylistic changes or that we want to implement or, you know, it goes back and forth. Sometimes it's suggested to put mm-hmm. something in and we all kind of have this collaborative vote of yes, no, maybe. And I think it works very well because it also feels very democratic. It also feels like we're participating in this election in a yeah. way of creating something. And I just enjoy it so much. And I'm hoping that more government entities and even private entities will think about using an advisory council of this type because it doesn't really take a lot of effort to reach out to the community and see who's willing to participate.
Yeah, and they're out there.
They're out there. They definitely are. And I think you have a program that they receive a stipend mm-hmm. and so it's something that people are valued for their time. A lot of people are volunteering way past whatever the stipend is because it's, you know, it's not humongous, but it's just a something to say thank you.
Yeah. The stipend is really just meant to be a thank you, but they spend a lot of time and we've been working on our glossary this year
yes.
in all the languages. That's been very interesting to have yes. their input.
Well, and that's the thing too, because the glossary is, you know, we need to have glossaries and a way that's authored so that they're ready for translation. And
yeah.
most people now understand the concept of plain language in English, where you have to have it readied so it can be translated and you don't have a lot of things like acronyms or hyphenations or abbreviations mm-hmm. and anything that could prevent something or slang that, you know, could prevent it from being well understood Yeah, basically.
And I've seen this new uprising, I'll call it an uprising in the best way, of glossary creation across the board in the language industry.
Yes.
I've seen more asks for glossary creations in these last 2 years than I have in the last 15.
Mm-hmm. And, well, we can write the book.
Yeah.
Yes, we together. Can. Yes, we can.
How to do it.
Because it is so, it was almost looked upon in the past as just this amazing thing if you had a glossary, like it was the creme fraiche of everything, you know? And now it's like, okay, we need this as a baseline.
Right.
And see the value of, well, I mean, obviously we all see the value of having it. It helps everyone understand what the goal is from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I've just seen a huge uprising and clients asking for this and people creating them. So
yeah,
it's amazing.
I'm happy to see that it's needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. For us, obviously there's just a lot of election terms that really need defined. And so it's an educational piece for our audience, but for the translators and the council themselves, like agreeing on how to use the terms consistently, it's saving a ton of time. And I was thinking when you said uprising, I thought you were going to say something like maybe the translation community would see it as a way of squelching their creativity or something. But government documents, official documents, and there's so much legalese. I did learn that in the judicial department, that terms don't exist in other languages or the systems are so different.
Right.
And so you have to be pretty precise. You have to be very precise with a lot of the terms.
Right, right. We're still trying to understand who's been elected or not elected here in Spain. We still don't get it. Like, yeah, we have no idea. We think somebody is elected. And then somebody was in court the other day, and it's, you know, again, these different things when you are an immigrant and you're learning the new system.
Yeah.
And there's a tribunal instead of one judge and a jury. Yes. So yeah, I don't ever want to go to court here. I don't ever want
to
be
called. Oh, you don't want to go to court here either.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's very true. Yeah, either way though, it's really interesting to see the differences. So to your point, when we're talking about countries and communities that have smaller, different types of judicial systems, or smaller or larger, or just, you know, a different structure, and we're trying to communicate the American system into these languages where, like you said, it doesn't exist. That's the transcreation part that we have to come up with.
Yeah.
And the advisory council has been very helpful in that transcreation process. And it's really all it does is opens up the ability to become even more creative, because that's what transcreation is about. So I argue the opposite. I definitely think that the uprising is a good thing, and it needs to happen, like Lauren said, it needs to be the baseline, so that anything going forward, you have this basically creating a Bible to go back to and say, this is what we have to adhere to. We need to adhere to this document. So everything we translate here, this after, you know, it's our, it's the terms that we have preferred. And and language is living, and language will be updated, but you at least have a history of why you were using that term, and then you can have a history of why it was updated, and when was that, and why this decision was made about that. So, I mean, it makes everything very well documented, and it allows the translator to understand the history of why this term is being used. And I think there's just so much more that goes into translation than what people think. And,
And there's the cultural part. I mean, it's fascinating to think about immigrants and joining our system. You know, a lot of people from different countries, their interactions and understanding or trust of their government back home affects their interactions with the government here. And I also see this as a way of showing our value of openness and inclusion and trust in the system.
Right.
So the way we translate the words matters. It does.
It really does. It really does. Because I always think of just like a real simple explanation that you'll know this one. When somebody says that they're sick in Spanish and they might use the term grave. And then in English, you know, that's grave, like they're dying.
Yeah.
And so, but you don't mean that you're dying in Spanish if you say you're grave. You're just really sick, but you're not on your deathbed. And just little things like that in language, if you extrapolate that and you apply it to a judicial term, that judicial term could mean something far more serious.
Yeah, carry different weight.
Right, carry a much different weight, have, carry a much more serious tone. And it's up to us to make sure that we can convey the differences. But yeah, no, we're really excited about that. And I'm very excited that you have been able to make the transition from one department to the next and really embrace it and bring with that all the knowledge you've had in all the other different departments in your personal life and your education. But it feels like this culmination of all of it was leading you to this moment.
Yes.
And
I do too. Our elections director, she saw the development of the legislation to do this, and it came up with this position to get it going, included in the fiscal for it. And she told me, she said, I don't know how we're going to find someone who has the project management, the cultural sensitivity, the experience with languages and cultures and convening groups around, basically work groups. And so I told her, I didn't know. It's just serendipity. Like it was made for me. And the best thing about this job right now, compared to all the others, is, maybe at this time in my life, it's just that it's a project. It's very focused, and they've given resources to do it. It's not like scrabbling, I get a focus on this every day. I'm not pulled in a lot of different directions. So that's what I really am enjoying about the work too, is it's so focused, and there's something to show for it. Like every 3 or 4 months we show our work.
Right.
In an election.
And then next year there'll be 4 more languages. So it'll be 18 by next January. That's amazing.
Yeah, we're waiting to see if that bill passes. That was that came from advocacy from other groups that said we want to have translations too.
And right.
So if there's a bill in our short session, which ends next month, to change the formula for including languages, which would increase them.
Well, maybe what we can do is we can write that book and then we can go on a 50-state tour and get all the rest of the states to do it.
Yeah. It's so important.
Oh yeah. That would be, definitely.
I mean, we could travel for fun too.
And a shout out to our council. Just this week, our secretary awarded a John Lewis Youth Leadership Award from Secretary of State. Every Secretary of State can award someone. But John Lewis was a civil rights leader and had a long career in Congress for the people and a very extraordinary person. And so, we had 2 of our Translation Advisory Council. One is 17 years old, speaks Chinese, and is involved in her community. And then an amazing student in high school. She's probably going to be at Stanford or Harvard next year.
Wow.
And then the other one is at Oregon State University. And he's a young man he was the chair of the Salem Human Rights Commission when he was in high school.
Wow.
He's worked on all kinds of local and like school board and then state and federal campaigns. He's a member of the student body government. And right now he's running for, I think, vice president of student body government. And,
amazing.
So Angelo and Renee, they are top notch. But these are young people who are incredibly busy and they're on the council. It's just amazing.
You know, and that's those people that when I hear these wonderful stories, Because as you know, I used to be an educator and I used to love knowing where did my kids go? You know, where did they head to? And
yeah.
And when you get to see their lives unfold, it's amazing. And it just warms your heart knowing that they went off and did something truly amazing that you knew that they would do. And they may not even be able to recognize it right now. And some of them know they're great, but they don't know the difference between what we're seeing and what they might be experiencing, because it's incredible when you have young people.
And it's not just the American success, you know, definition of success.
Right.
They're giving back, they're involved, and they're not jaded.
Exactly. You know?
They see the potential still.
They
it's
do.
Amazing.
And that's the thing that we need to keep in mind. And so I know we're coming up on a wrap here for our wonderful guest here today. But I want to keep everyone thinking of the fact that what Kelly has done with her life, she was that student. She was that person that had that dream and went and lived it. And look what she's done now. And I don't think that there is much people could be doing in government that's more effective and more important than what you're doing. Like you said, our elections, keeping our democracy viable and also pure and out there, and people can have access to the information.
It.
Yeah, there's no hidden agenda with what you're doing.
And on top of that, the Girl Scouts.
And the Girl Scout.
That's just a side gig, helping the community in that way. It's amazing.
But it's also great, though, because you're affecting women, young women, whose mothers, for whatever reason, I cannot be with them right now, are incarcerated, but they are given an opportunity to continue their family connection and to learn how to value their parent in a way maybe that they wouldn't otherwise.
Yes.
And,
just a visit. They're actually in a troop together. They're talking about how to budget and, you do their finances and what careers look like. And it's so amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's got to be so rewarding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a Girl Scout. I was a Brownie and then dropped out. So
yeah, that's the usual.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have parents that were excited to take me to things. I mean, I think my mom was much more excited when I was singing because she got to come see the plays. You can't really see what Girl Scouts do. Not as much.
I tried to get involved, but at that time, I wanted to do the things the Boy Scouts were doing.
Yeah.
And they had separation at that time, which now I understand is not the case. But yeah, I wanted to go camping and learn how to tie knots and all those things, you know? And I know now they're doing it more. So I love that.
I think it's, they're trying to maintain relevancy in the world of women. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult.
Yes.
Even just the model of a volunteer parent spending time with planning and everything has changed a lot. These girls are going to benefit and they get to see their mom.
They're going to benefit because they know you also. And I think that that's amazing. So, and I'm sure your daughters, all three daughters, correct?
Two girls, one boy.
Yeah. Oh, and there's a boy.
Yeah, my son said to give him a shout out. Santiago.
All right.
Shout out.
We got a shout out. All right. Is there anything else that you want to leave us with before we conclude today?
Vote.
Good. We got the message. Vote. Get out and vote, people.
In Oregon, it's 21 days before the election to update to register if you haven't changed your address. It's going to be happening in all states. Primaries are in different months. Ours is in May, but of course, the general election is in November, and it makes a difference, especially in local races.
Yes, it does. Yes, it
does. A few votes can make a difference.
They really can. And please don't be jaded out there, people. I actually know that I won't be in Oregon when I have time to vote, but I've already signed up with my county to receive my vote by, what is it called? Not vote by
absentee.
Mail, because we always do that. The absentee ballot. Yes, I already have my absentee ballot signed up. I'm ready to do that. I'm excited.
Isn't that great?
It is.
You can do that. It's so
amazing. It is. You can vote. You can be anywhere in the world and still vote. And that's a gift that the United States has. I don't believe that is the case in every country. So I take full advantage of it. And I've always participated in the election process. So,
well, so it's a responsibility and an honor and a privilege to vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and it's one that we should never, ever take for granted, because without voting, you know, we're going to not know what's coming next. We got to remain free. We got to remain able. So, and so I just want to thank you again for everything that you've shared with us today. And I really, really, truly know you better now from understanding your journey, but I'm just so in awe of you. And we tease Kelly and call her our super fan at Translate This, because she was one of the first people to say, "Hey, I am listening. I am one of those 3.5 people out there listening." So, and she's been so encouraging all season one, sending me a little notes of once in a while saying, "Oh, that was funny. Oh, I like that." And it was just such a kick in the pants to know that she was listening. So we really wanted to have her on the show. Yeah, no, thank you.
And likewise to you and your colleagues. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, well, Lauren's doing a great job filling in while Richard's off doing his thing. So I'm excited to see this journey of season two here with Translate This, because she's got a lot of interesting topics. Yeah, Kelly, you're gonna be wowed with some of the things that the millennials are going to be bringing to the table this season.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Get ready.
Yeah. Get ready, people. We're
going to have... My favorite episode was Gen X, Gen Z, I think.
Yeah.
There you go. So that's what's coming next. So it's going to be fun. So we'll have perspective that's a little different than the two Gen Xers that were season one. Well, this has been another incredible episode of Translate This.
Yes.
And Kelly, I am just, anytime you want to come back, you are more than welcome. We would love to have you as a guest if there's anything exciting going on. And before we conclude, the last question is, where are you traveling to next?
Well, we just got back from Turkey, which was amazing. And next, we're thinking of going to Oaxaca, Mexico, and learning how to cook mole and learn about the culture there.
Jealous. Oh, that sounds great. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to leave on that note for our listeners. They're all going to be jealous of you going and eating some wonderful mole. it's so good.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. And this has been a great episode again. I'm so excited for you all to listen to this. You're going to love every single word. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for the invitation.
Bye-bye.
Bye.